if you created something around your experience and you said, hey, here's what happened to me and here's how I'm fixing it and here's how it's going to help you, whether it's the liners or it's the mentorship or whatever it is, number one, everybody would buy it because that's what happened to you and that's what everybody else is going through. But number two, there's an opportunity there because you went through it, right? Like you mm-hmm. it's not a, because as entrepreneurs, we see opportunities everywhere. I see opportunities everywhere. And some of them are real and some of them aren't. Like some of them, I'm like, that's an opportunity. And everybody else is like, Gary, no one cares about that. But what you experienced is a real opportunity. Welcome back to another episode of Dental Marketing Theory. I'm your host, Gary Bird. I'm the CEO of SMC National, where we help dental offices like yours have predictable new patient flow. And today, I got a doozy for you. My friend, Dr. Avi from Instagram, we actually met on Instagram, and he posts a ton of great content, and he was interacting with me, and I was interacting with him. And finally, I was just like, we should just do a podcast, because you have a lot of cool stuff that's going on. And I also think that you have some really unique perspectives that are going to change maybe the way other people think about the world of dentistry, which I love hearing from people like you. And so, first of all, I would just love to, if you could just tell us how did you get into the dental space?
So I think, my story kind of starting out was, wasn't, you know, you can go back to like high school, but that's kind of when I originally got exposed to dentistry. My uncle was a dentist. I spent, you know, a summer kind of just shadowing him in his practice. And it wasn't necessarily the tactical stuff. I wasn't like obsessed with teeth or anything like that. It was more of the lifestyle. And I think the type of person he was, I saw that he was able to, you know, help people, you know, get them out of pain, everything that you see and hear about that dentists are able to do. And he was also just living like a very balanced life. Like he was a present father, you know, he was, you know, golfing, you know, from what I saw, you know, he never really seemed like that stress. I'm sure he was, but that's what kind of drew me in. Then I went in, did dental school and whatnot, and then came out and I thought, you know, hey, I'm going to find a mentor. I'm going to find someone that I can just, you know, just learn from, soak up everything from. And I thought the first job had it, the first associateship, but, it turned out that, you know, they were looking for me to kind of come in and hold my own weight as an associate. And there wasn't that much like mentorship. So I think that's, you know, the biggest thing that a lot of young dentists, you know, we kind of assume that, you know, the owner, someone's going to be there to kind of help us out. But it's tough and it's very rare to find that.
Yeah, you know, the number one thing that I hear over and over and over again that associate dentists are looking for is mentorship. And you don't get what's necessarily needed to do your job from college, right? The college is teaching you like the bare minimum, and then you have to go into the real world and actually practice. And so you have a lot of questions. The other thing that I've noticed, and I would be curious of your thoughts on this, it seems that like dentists kind of eat their own too. Where like online, like sometimes people will post things and they'll just get ripped apart, right, by other dentists. And I if I was a dentist, I'd be scared to put myself out there. Is that an accurate perception that I'm seeing, or is it? Tell me about your perception if I'm off base.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. I think, you know, there's definitely some big Facebook groups and communities out there that have been started where people will share cases and stuff like that. Some people are very uplifting and very helpful, but a lot of people, you know, I don't know if it has something to do with just the way that tone doesn't really carry the way that, you know, it might, you know, online and those forums. But yeah, there's a lot of people projecting. I think a lot of dentists out there, you know, I feel like they're insecure about their own stuff, so they feel better about themselves by, you know, putting others down. But it sucks because that creates this like vicious cycle of now you have younger dentists who genuinely want to learn. Now you're getting, you know, shit on by more experienced dentists. And
so you don't have the, you didn't get the necessary, like the full training that you think you're going to get out of college. You don't have that mentor locally. And then you don't have a place to go and ask questions where you're like, you feel safe where people aren't going to rip you apart. And it can put you, I mean, there's a reason that dentistry is, you know, one of the higher suicide rates and things like that. You can see all these pressures that are coming in. tell us a little bit about your associate journey. Like what size group were you working at? Like, tell us a little bit about that. I don't know if you're allowed to share the group or whatever, but whatever you're allowed to share there. And then what you thought it was going to be and then what it actually was.
Yeah. So, I actually have a YouTube channel where I made like 10 videos for every associateship and then kind of like reflected on them. You could add that in the show. That's so
cool. I'm going to definitely check that out and drop that in the show for sure.
Yeah. And, I kind of created that for this exact reason, right? I want to share my story and let other dentists know that, hey, you're not alone. Like I went through this and I know a bunch of other people who have gone through it, but no one really puts it out there. And I'm not saying I have a solution to every problem, but you know, I think just talking about it and then just getting your expectations kind of aligned, with reality, you can still make it a very like good career. Right. But yeah, so kind of my thing was, yeah, went out, had that first associateship. We were living up in Connecticut at the time, and I probably had about 8 in my first 2 years. So I got a lot of different exposure. I was in the private 8 practice.
8 different offices?
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, 8 offices in 2 years. And it was kind of a mixed bag. Like every opportunity is a little different. Mm-hmm. The first one, you know, they just turned out they weren't busy enough for a second associate. And we didn't realize that until I was there for a couple months. So then they let me go. No notice or anything, by the way, like it was just like, you know, clean cut. And this was stuff that I learned along the way of just like contract negotiations and stuff. Then another one, I was at a dentist, like second location. It was like more of their satellite, almost like a startup. So I don't think it was like necessarily the best thing for me to be there, just being so new and young, right? Because there's this whole journey as a clinician where you have to learn how to diagnose and do work, right? So you've got, back then definitely was not the best equipped dentist skill-wise to be able to really generate production. So that wasn't really a good fit, but I was there for a bit. And then ultimately I was like 6 months out of school and I was like, I didn't do a residency, but I felt confident to do work, but I was in two situations where I couldn't actually do any dentistry. So I was like, I need to find somewhere where I can just go in, put my head down and just start working on patients. So I ended up finding like a Medicaid office. We were living in Manhattan at the time. And then this job was up in-
Was it an adult Medicaid or a pedo?
It was adult. It was adult Medicaid. So I was running like 3 columns. I mean, the commute to get to this office was like 1 hour and 40 minutes each way. Like, wow. I was desperate. I was desperate, but I did it. And I got that fulfillment of like, hey, I get to, you know, take care of these patients.
Yeah.
I got the reps in and that's how I looked at it. And so that was its own experience. But then I burnt out. Like, I did that for 6 to 8 months. And then I was like, okay, I can't do this. I was seeing like 30, 40 patients a day. You know, no hygienist, nothing. But then I was like, okay, let me try to find like a private practice where I could, you know, not necessarily find like
a... Was that a DSO? Was the Medicaid office a DSO?
They were becoming one, yeah. Like they were in that...
Were they pretty systematized? Was everything systematized or were you still kind of flying by the seat of your pants?
I was still flying by... They were doing the whole like trying to change over their like, you know, software and all that. So they were getting it together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not fun being on the other end of it when DSOs are going through that process. So
yeah, no, it's a tricky.
So yeah, we did that. And then I started to find some like private offices working part-time. Mm-hmm. And then for those spots, you know, one of them was pretty good. But then what ends up happening is that whole expectation, I was still hoping for a mentor and I wasn't really getting it. So then that's when I decided to just like, okay, I got to take some type
of... What made
it
pretty good? The one that you said that was pretty good, what made the one that... I get why the Medicaid office was good for a time because you got your reps in and patients had lower probably expectations. You were doing probably similar treatments over and over and over again. So you were able to connect those gut dots and I can understand why you would burn out. But what... When you went to the next one and you're like, man, this one was pretty good. I didn't have the mentor that I wanted. What made it pretty good?
It was good because I had, at that point, I had a little bit more confidence in my clinical skills and I was able to kind of do my own thing. I was kind of able to do my thing. And my expectation at that point, I just wanted to do like crown and bridge and some filling, some extractions, and the work was there. Right. So, at that point in my career, it was solid. And I kind of rode that one out for a little bit. I say a little bit, I think it was like a year. But then, you know, in and out of other spots too. And we can go make a whole thing on that, but it was, that one was good. And then another one was, I was there part-time, and this, the owner, I had connected with him. It was actually pretty unique because we connected earlier on in the year. And then, he had a need to, you know, his associate was leaving. He wanted to replace him, and he was like, "Hey, I'll groom you. I'll teach you." So I was like, "Oh wow, this sounds great." And then, so I go in, and, he was giving me like some pointers here and there. But what I realized, like, that's the reality is, like, if you have an owner who is practicing alongside, it is very hard as an associate to really get that mentorship. And that was probably the best situation that I could be in, like, because he was doing implants and he was kind of walking me through it and doing the best he could to mentor. But to be able to be flying the plane and also trying to get this like active coaching, like, it doesn't work, right? You almost need somebody that can.
So did you ever get the mentor that you wanted?
I never did. I never got it to the capacity that I thought. It was a lot of like piecemealed stuff that I had to just kind of put together, right? And then I invested outside.
Have you talked to any of your friends or anybody you know that ever did get the mentorship level that they wanted?
So not really, you know. Yeah, I think one of my buddies, it was his uncle.
So the expectation versus the realities, there's a gap there, right? That's just
absolutely.
Yeah. And do you think that's more on the school side? Like the school is just not equipping you far enough down the road, or is it the mentor side, or is it a little bit of both?
It's definitely both. I think school does its, it does its best. It does what it can to essentially get you out. And then like, you're trained to not hurt people. Right. As like you're trained to just not hurt people.
Yeah.
And then the mentorship side, I just don't think there's enough dentists out there, right, who are like taking the time to create stuff. And I know you've got a couple with like Ignite and Dental Nachos, and they're trying to create something to fill that gap, but I still feel like there's so much more opportunity. And honestly, for me, at some point down in the future, I want to create something to kind of have like this, you know, mentorship.
That'd be huge, man. I know people would flock if you had something that could help. I don't know how to do that at scale. But so let me ask you a question. If you ran a DSO right now, or you ran a group, let's say you ran a group of like five offices, what would you do differently? Like, how would you set it up differently to not only attract the dentist that you want to work with, but also keep the dentist there?
So a DSO, I actually, the one that I'd worked at recently, they had a pretty good setup, but they were smaller. I think the biggest thing is, right, is if you have a dentist or multiple dentists dedicated, right, to having like a legitimate coaching/mentorship thing where it's like, it's on the schedule. Like the associate almost maybe doesn't work one day or 2 days out of a month, and they're just supposed to like sit down with this, questions. You know, senior deck.
Is it just like a Q&A, or is it like specific things that you go over? Like, how would you want that laid out?
I would want it to where the mentor is coming to the table with an agenda, right? Like, hey, you know, today we're covering these three topics.
So if you have all these dentists, right? So let's say you have 10 dentists. And so what I hear you saying is like, okay, we need to, first of all, get them time to be able to do it. But then someone also has to have a system, because they're not going to have an agenda necessarily, because they're busy working, right? So they're busy cranking stuff out. So someone up above with a clinical background is going to need to sit down and say, okay, here's the flow that I want to work people in. And then also you probably need the mentoree to give feedback too and say, well, I don't want to learn about implants yet. I'm not ready for that. I want to learn more about this treatment. Is that right?
Yeah. And the mentoree should be able to like mentee, or whatever you want to call it, should come to the table and being like, hey, these are like three challenges that I had this last week. How would you solve for this? Like what's a better approach? So that way you're getting a lot of like tactical stuff that you can implement immediately, but then also you're getting the benefit of the mentor where they can see the challenges that are coming up. Right. I think that's like a very good way to do it. You know, I think a lot of DSOs do the right thing, like of just like giving this like stipend, right, for the associate to kind of use for continuing education. I think that's good. I think But I do think that like you have to, if you really want that next level, I think is you have to have something, have a program dedicated to that internally. You do that, you could attract associates and you could keep them, because you got to remember, not every dentist wants to be an owner, right? Like, I mean, for me, like I'm still not an owner, but like coming out, like I was just like, why can't I just be like an associate and then like kind of make good money, like not have to worry about everything that comes with ownership and just focus on that, but then also be able to like live my life outside, right?
Yeah. How many people do you think, like what's the mix right now coming out of school? Well, if you had to take a guess, of people who still have that entrepreneur, I want to open my own practice, versus, you know, I'm good with just going and working for somebody and I just don't want the headache and I just want the mentorship and go from there.
I would say it's probably 70-30 leaning towards wanting to be an associate. I think what happens,
really?
Yes, I think what happens is early on they get burned at a couple of these jobs, and then that's when dentists are like, screw this, I'm just going to go open up my own shop, which is the worst thing, because none of those dentists are equipped to be business owners. None of them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know this, you've seen it, like it's just, they're not. And so it's all coming out of a place of they're doing it because they think they have to. And to some degree, you have to. I think I'm probably one of the rare cases of going through, you know, 11 associateships in 4 years that a lot of people would have just thrown, like they would have just been like, I want to own. But I knew that wasn't for me, because I was like, I don't want to put so much, that's not what I want to be doing, right? Because it, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, but I didn't want that to be
that kind of entrepreneur. It didn't make sense. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, not that. It's a very particular kind of entrepreneurship, and it's hard too. It's not for the faint of heart, for sure. So where are you at now? Like, where are you at in your journey now? What kind of office are you at? If you can share the office name or whatever you can share there, like, what's your relationship with, like, now, and what are you doing there?
Yeah, so I'm actually going through a transition right now. I'm finishing up at a private office. You know, I think it's a good office, but the kind of where we're at going into this, it was supposed to be a little bit of me and the owner kind of working hand in hand. I was going to lead more of the clinical. He was going to lead more of the admin. But then I just think, you know, and we'll get into this in a bit, but I've also created an online program for dentists that has started to skyrocket. So I want more time dedicated to that. So I just wasn't able to commit as many clinical days. The owner himself, like, he's looking for an associate to really come in and you know, basically run the show at the office, which I think is a great opportunity, but that's not the direction that I'm heading in. So I'm actually about to start at a group practice here where I'm friends with the owners, and they have a need for basically a part-time dentist, right? A dentist to come in 2 days a week, just because they have just a bunch of patients coming in and the way that they run their office, it's a little bit more catered to like the millennial patient. A lot of Invisalign, a lot of, you know.
What city? Like, what city is that in?
Austin.
Okay, cool. Okay, so that's really cool. Okay, so now you knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur, but you didn't want to be a dentist entrepreneur, if that makes sense. You didn't want to open up your own dental office, so you decided to go a different route. Tell us a little bit about that route where you are working with dentists and around clear aligners.
Yeah. So basically, you rewind to when I was at the DSO, like for, you know, about 2 years ago. That was at a point in my career right before the pandemic. I was burning out on just bread and butter dentistry. So during the pandemic, I invested in CE. I learned implants and I learned how to do aligners. And then I went back to work, and then the owners at the private offices that I was at up in Connecticut, they were like, hey, you know, just focus on root canals, focus on this stuff. Like, aligners aren't profitable. And I was just like, that doesn't make sense. I was like, I'm hearing the opposite. But yeah, now
they look plastic, back. A piece of plastic you can sell for $5,000 that the robot does most of the work sounds pretty profitable.
Yeah. So right. I was like, yeah, that's the thing. It's like he wasn't offering it. So he didn't actually know how to offer it predictably. So anyways, I come to the DSO, they're like, yeah, you know, we have the iTero, you know, we fully support you, run with it. And so I started taking off. I started like 50 cases in 6 months. So I was cranking it. And then the reps were just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And then I was like, what do you mean? I'm talking about it. Like, I'm doing it. And so I had a mentor, Dr. Blocker. And she was kind of helping me out with just cases and stuff like that. And then I started to teach my coworkers. So one of the doctors I was with, he had been a dentist for like 25 years. But he was at a point where, you know, he'd sold his practice in California, moved to Texas, was just kind of cruising as an associate, but was open to learning. He started doing aligners.
So you were mentoring. Like, so you were mentoring the younger guys, mentoring the older dentist now, right? That's pretty
cool. Yep. Yeah. So I was like, and it felt great because he was able to do it and he saw it and he's just like, wait, this is awesome. It's a game changer. It's great for the patient. I mean, it's good for production, you know, the laundry list of benefits. Right. And then, so I went to the DSO and I talked to leadership. I'm like, hey, could we like carve out like a role for me, like some director, you know, in-house director or whatever. And they were open to it, but then they were like, hey, this looks like a really big undertaking. So they were just like, you know, let's not. And then I was like, okay. And then my wife was actually like, hey, why don't you just go consult, right? Just consult with some of the dentists that you know. So I started doing that. And then, you know, some of the docs I was working with, they started like 25 cases in their first 2 months. So I was [S2] Wow. [S1] Like, okay, like this curriculum is clearly working. And then at that point I was like, how can I scale this? And cause it was just really hard to do one-on-one while practicing full time.
Yep.
So then came across this model of like an online training program with, you know, essentially monthly kind of like Q&A coaching calls. And so that's what I've been doing. And it's not just Invisalign focused, it's clear aligner. So it's, you know, all brands. I'm teaching more as
you're
a general
teaching
dentist.
More of the, yeah, you're teaching more of the skill set of how to sell clear aligners, whatever brand it is.
Correct. Because I realize there's a huge gap in that. You know, you've got orthodontists who are, you know, they have so much knowledge, but it's almost like too much because mm-hmm. the general dentist, like in dental school, we don't really get a lot of like ortho exposure. Yeah. And yep. so you have somebody that's, you know, 1 out of 10, they're talking at a level 10 and you have the understanding at a level 1, there's a huge gap. So I'm kind of simplified it to kind of help meet that need.
What's your clinical position? Like I've been really curious about this. So like when Invisalign first came out, general dentist or orthodontist rejected it, right? They said, nope, this is like the worst thing ever. So then Invisalign went to general dentist. We're like, hey, you guys want to start doing some ortho? And the general dentist were like, sure. And then like, it was kind of like the orthodontist kind of had to accept it, right? And kind of had to adopt it. And now it's a much more common practice. Then you had, what was it? Not clear, correct. What's the big one that got a lot of backlash?
Because they were trying Club?
To, yeah,
Smile Direct Club.
So then you got Smile Direct Club. And they are like, we're just going to skip everything and just mail it directly to them. I actually tried to do it and I have like a bigger bone in the bottom of my mouth, so I couldn't take the impressions. So I wasn't, because I was interested in their process, right?
Yeah,
and so I did the impression several times and I was finally like, I'm not doing it anymore. And so, and then they got a lot of backlash because they're like, hey, you actually still need a doctor somewhere in the process. But my curiosity is like, okay, if someone has like a little crooked tooth here, like I did, I had like just barely a little crooked. So I just wanted to straighten those. No big deal. But then there's some people who are like, no, if you start moving the teeth and you don't know what you're doing, you can cause a lot of problems. Like you gotta, like where, what's the actual, and for like a patient, from a patient's perspective, what's the truth in all of this? Like, what can you do? What can't you do? What's safe? What's not safe?
So what I've learned in my exposure is like, it may look very simple on the surface, but there's multiple factors that you have to assess, right? So it gets very tricky to be able to say like, you know, hey, yeah, like just you could do it yourself and stuff like that. But I'm also not going to be like, oh, like you have to go. Like it's just, it's more of, it's like you, because once you, I mean, they opened a can of worms, right? Like Smile Direct Club opened that can of worms. It's like, do we really need people? Like, do we really need it? So, you know, for patients, it's just, it's more of a thing where, I mean, I'm going to lean on the side of go see your provider, because what happens is you, it can look simple. And I've seen this in my own cases where I've been like, oh, this is going to be easy, right? Like I look at the x-rays, look at the patient, and then we go through and then something comes up, right? Or, you know, the teeth aren't moving as we thought they were going to. So there's like a whole list of troubleshooting that your dentist or orthodontist can do for you. which I don't think, you know, Smile Direct Club really had like a solve for it. Yeah. Right. So that's, I mean, I think that answers your question. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, no, it
like
does. I said, definitely. Like, and then what are your thoughts on Smile Direct Club?
So I think they were smart, very smart, because they saw a massive need in the product that they created, right? Orthodontists aren't doing, right? Because if you look at the timing that you just said, orthodontists weren't really accepting it. And then Invisalign went to general dentists, but general dentists weren't really running with it either, because they were starting it and then they were running into like problems. Like patients were getting, you know, what you call posterior open bites, which is where the back teeth don't touch because the movement up front wasn't done correctly. And so not a lot of dentists, a lot of dentists were afraid to do it. This was probably the generation right before me, right? So then now you've got all this, you got millions of dollars in advertising, right? Invisalign has been advertising aligners for hundreds
of millions of dollars. They had to re-educate the whole market. They had to re-educate dentists and they had to re-educate the consumer as well.
Correct. So that's why it's like, so you have this huge thing. And so Smile Direct Club was just watching, I'm sure, and was like, wait a minute, we could just go right to them because patients wanted it. Right? You had patients like coming into dental offices wanting this. So when I talk to dentists, like I kind of tell them like, listen, like, you know, the ones that hate Smile Direct Club, like, you can't hate them. Like if you've been a practicing dentist for, you know, over, you know, 10 years, like you're part of the reason why, and you're not offering aligners, like you're part of the reason why Smile Direct Club was able to have success. Cause if you were to just educate your patient and talk to them, they would, you know, more than likely they're doing treatment with you. They're not doing the mail order. You know what I mean? So now kind of where Smile Direct Club is at, you know, you've obviously seen it play out, but I think it's also like a unique time because there's so many other brands that are starting to come about where their plastic does work. But general dentists need to, you know, get the education to either one, offer it themselves and do the simple, straightforward cases, or talk about it and get these patients to the orthodontist. So that way you can actually treat this problem. Otherwise you're going to have these do-it-yourself brands, you know, continuing to still have a heartbeat.
Got it. Okay. So yeah, I totally agree with you. Okay. So what are your thoughts on, like, tell me a story about when you have helped somebody, like a specific story, one person that it just, they blew it out of the water. Like you came in, you helped coach them up, and some of the results, cases they sold, how much money they made off of that, and, you know, the great outcomes that they saw with their patients.
Yeah. So I think probably my favorite story is a dentist that I worked with where they had zero experience. They had heard everything that you could hear about aligners and the benefits and, you know, what it could do. And they really wanted it, but they were afraid to start, right? They just didn't know where to start. And so like they'd watch the modules and whatnot. And then they found me through Instagram. And then they took my course and, you know, afterwards they didn't really have like that many questions, but then I think once they started to talk about it, they started to see that they had more patients interested than they thought. Mm-hmm. And so then they were just kind of like, oh crap, like how do I do this? Right. And so it was nice cause I could kind of work with them. And their practice was like, it was not like some fancy, like, you know, fee for service. Like it was an insurance-based practice. They had that demographic of a lot of patients where they had braces when they were kids, they didn't wear their retainer and they had relapse. Right. So it was just sitting there. You know, the first month after they worked with me, they had about 8K starts. So that's like around $40,000 in revenue.
And then how big of an office was it? Like how big was it revenue wise before that? Was it, they're doing 100,000 a month?
They had like four ops. So two hygienists and then the doctors working out of two chairs. I think overall 80, the practice
60.
Yeah. Not that high.
Okay, so that's a huge jump. $40,000 is a huge jump for them. It's not 100% jump, but it's getting up there.
Yeah. I mean, for myself, like when I did it, it was for any dentist who's not currently doing it, and if you're just doing right, like basic restorative dentistry, you can double your production easily. Like easily. Wow. Because the way the scale works, right? So with them, now they do like 10 to 12 cases regularly, like every month. And there was like a little bit of a lag period because what happens is when you talk to your patients about it for the first time, probably 10% of them will actually commit on the spot and say yes. Because you know, they wanted it. They were primed. A lot of them, though, you're planting the seed because you haven't talked to them about this before. It's the first time you're talking about it. It's $5,000. It's a commitment. But then when you see them, right, 6 months and a year later, and you're still talking about it, then those numbers go up because now they have a reason. And I teach from like an oral health perspective. I don't teach the cosmetics. And patients really resonate with that. And so you do that enough times, and then now all of a sudden, you know, half of your practice is aligners and you've doubled, you know, the revenue and you're, yeah. and you really haven't changed. You're just on the computer a little bit more, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it's a very easy way.
So what's the biggest hang up? Like, why is this such a struggle? Because you're right. Patients do want this. So why do dentists struggle with this so much? Cause it is, it's just a dentist to patient issue, right? There's something yeah. that's broken in between there.
I think it's I think the biggest thing is fear. So dentists don't like change, right? So it's fear of change because it's something new. And then I think to start, like they don't have that confidence or they may not feel like they have that support to really just kind of like get it going. Like dentists are creatures of habit, right? So you do something that's a little bit different and now all of a sudden, like it seems like it's a heavy weight to lift. And the worst part is they go off of what other people are saying. So like all it takes is for one person to have like a negative experience, like their buddy, like, oh, don't do it. And then like they'll cancel it. And it's just like, why are you didn't even try it. Like maybe they weren't doing it correctly. Right. So that is that's the biggest hang up. I think it's fear of something new. But like with all these brands and like this in-office printing and people are making their own aligners, like the wave, I mean, it's all here.
It's coming. And the patients are going to go somewhere.
Exactly. And like, and I think these aligner brands are doing a good job of, you know, of marketing and, but they really, I think just need to start focusing towards the doctors and a lot of DSOs. I know they're starting to move it up on the agenda of what they want to do. And so that's why I've like actually started to reach out to some DSOs and kind of offer my program as like another resource, right? Like
that's huge.
You've got, because you've got like a lot of them use Invisalign, but a lot of them are doing like Reveal, Clear Correct and stuff like that. And I'm just trying to go to DSOs and just be like, hey, like if you have a bunch of doctors who are motivated to learn, like I can teach them how to get it going because that's what I do.
That's so cool. Okay, I got a question for you. So your mom needs clear aligners. She comes to you. What company are you going to put her in? Like what brand of clear aligners are you going to put her in and why?
So if my mom comes to me, I'll put her in Invisalign. And then the reason being is I've done the most cases with them.
Okay.
I was certified in school, but that's where I've done all my cases. But it's interesting because I'm now like ever since I created the business, like I'm starting to like really keep my eyes open and hear about other brands. Clear Correct, I think they have an interesting product because they do something different with their trim lines, less attachment, stuff like that. So I think at this point it's just kind of also like trying different ones. I don't think it's the same. I think if you were rewind probably 5 years ago, maybe 5 years. Yeah. About five. Like, I think it probably would have been like Invisalign with my eyes closed, but like you've got brands like Spark and, you know, Candid and, like I was saying, like Clear Correct and stuff like that, where a lot of dentists are using it. And so if a lot of people are using it, that probably means it works. So I don't think you can actually just close your eyes anymore and say it. But again, with each brand, I think there's nuances. So you have to kind of know, right, what movements each one is good at. But once you have that knowledge, I think you can kind of do whatever you want.
That's awesome. What are the top five business books that have influenced you?
Top five business books.
Or podcasts. It can be just business information.
Yeah. For me personally, it's been Expert Secrets, Russell Brunson. That's been awesome. How to win Friends and Influence People. I just read Gap in the Gain. That was a really good book. Just kind of like high achievers and just kind of like navigating like everything that comes with that. Let's see. I'll be honest. I only recently started reading like business books, maybe like last year. But yeah, those are top three.
Awesome. And then what if I gave you $1 billion right now, but you had to sell everything. So you had to sell your house. You sold all of your businesses. You quit your job. But you have $1 billion in a bank. What would you do?
I would probably use it to surround myself with experts in multiple fields and then basically ask them, like, what are the biggest issues or problems that they see in their industry, and then try to create something to fill those needs.
Got it. So would it be probably dental, in dental, or?
I would do part dental. Yeah. I think I would start there. I think for me, like, I've always been wanting to pull away from dental just because of all the trauma and failed associateships. But, I think dental as an industry, it's slow moving, but there's so much potential.
Have you ever read the book, The Obstacle is the Way?
No.
You should read that.
Okay.
I think you would really like it. So basically what it is it explains that it's Ryan Holiday. It's stoic. He has like a stoic kind of mindset, a stoic philosophy mm-hmm. mindset is what it's around. But basically what it is you, when bad things happen, that's where we get strong. And then that also shows us where the opportunity is. So what I'm sitting here thinking as I'm hearing your story is, like, if you created something around your experience and you said, hey, here's what happened to me and here's how I'm fixing it and here's how it's going to help you, whether it's the liners or it's the mentorship or whatever it is, number one, everybody would buy it because that's what happened to you and that's what everybody else is going through. But number two, there's an opportunity there because you went through it, right? Like you mm-hmm. it's not because as entrepreneurs, we see opportunities everywhere. I see opportunities everywhere. And some of them are real and some of them aren't. Like some of them, I'm like, that's an opportunity. And everybody else is like, Gary, no one cares about that. But what you experienced is a real opportunity. So I think you'd like that book. You should check it out. It's an easy read too.
Yeah, no, I definitely will. And I've been doing a lot of like reflecting and journaling in this like entrepreneurship journey. So like that's something that I've realized is I'm like exactly what you said. I'm just kind of like seeing the gap in different things and then being able to fill it, but also not trying to like overcomplicate it. Like just using my story and my experiences to then turn around and then be able to create something of value for others. It's been cool.
That's awesome. All right. If you could have more time, money, or freedom, which one would you pick? You could only pick one, though.
Time.
Cool. And then
what about
why?
You?
Why
you,
time?
Would you go with time?
Yeah.
I think because with more time, there's more opportunity.
Yeah, personally. I agree. I probably go time. I like freedom, but the thing I'm learning about myself is like, I like the freedom to be able to work on new things. So as long as I can keep working and growing new things, then I get excited. Anytime that I get stuck doing something repetitive, it just burns me out like really, really quick.
Oh, yeah.
So now that I know myself a lot better, I just find the opportunity of doing the new thing inside of the other things that I'm already doing, right? The trick is without burning out my team, because you can be an entrepreneur, have a team of 100 people, and you're doing all this new stuff that constantly rattles everybody's cage, that messes people up. And a lot of people don't like all of that. So there's a balancing act in there. So
I like that because it's just like the entrepreneur's like Achilles heel, right? Is always wanting to create. But it's like, yeah, if you've created almost like this, like not confine, but yeah, you've created kind of a way to channel that and harness it. Then that leads to obviously like progress and innovation, which is pretty.
Yeah. Genius. And I think that's why entrepreneurs get so stuck in dental, because dental is at the end of the day, it's just, there's not a lot of innovation in dental, right? Like there's the clear aligners, or yeah, there's a new technology that comes out with implants, but you're still just doing implants, right? Like there wasn't this massive innovation that like that shakes it to the core. And so what I get to do is I've built the machine SMC that creates new patients for dental offices. That's awesome. And then people are working inside of that machine constantly. We're constantly trying to make it better. And then my job is to create boot camps and opportunities and podcasts and content and build up my personal brand that I can funnel back down to it and create other products. We have a SaaS company that's creating products for SMC and eventually for dentists and other people in the dental market. So there's all these opportunities, and I can do what I've learned to do is to do that without rocking the boat at SMC. And that was hard because I used to totally upturn everything. It was just like flip the table over and we're doing this new thing. And it's like, it would give.
Yo, this is working. Like, can you like relax? Like, this is working. This is fine.
Exactly. So learning that's hard to do though. That's a hard learning that balance of like, shut up, be quiet and let people do their jobs and then go play over here in your sandbox. Like figuring that out was huge for me. And that's really, really helped me a lot.
It's good advice. Yeah.
Okay. So question for you. Last question. Assuming every single person in the dental industry is listening and watching right now, what would you say to them?
Don't be afraid of change. Don't be afraid of change and invest in yourself. I think those are the two biggest things that I think would change a lot of dentists' lives. Honestly, I think a lot of dentists get stuck and they, you know, if when they get stuck, they're not open to change and they don't invest in themselves. Or you have the ones that invest in themselves, but then they're not open to the change. It's really weird. Like dentists will go and invest like thousands of dollars in education and then they won't implement it. So it's like, you have to have both, like be willing to invest and then be open to the change because you can, that's literally, and then, well, I guess the third thing, right, is like take action. Those three things.
Pick where to take action. Yeah. And yeah, I 1000% agree. Well, awesome. You did a great job today. How can people reach out to you if they want to learn more about the clear aligners and they want to get coached up on that?
Yeah. Easiest way is my Instagram. It's at dr.avi and doctor is spelled out. From there, you know, the links in my bio, but also I respond to all my DMs. I put a lot of content out on that page as well for aligner education. And that'd be the easiest way to get in touch.
Awesome. Well, great job today. And make sure you guys reach out if you have any questions. And I have some questions for you off air. So I'm going to end the episode and I'm going to ask you some stuff now. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much.